From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. For more than 2 weeks, the Park Fire has burned across Butte, Tehama, Shasta, and Plumas counties. As of 11 this morning, the wildfire, California's fourth largest in history, has burned more than 420,000 acres. It's less than 40% contained. But the Park Fire doesn't just pose dangers to humans and forest wildlife. It also threatens some of the last habitats for wild, spring-run California salmon in the Central Valley, a population that's already seen a devastating decline in recent years. To tell us more about the impact of wildfires on these iconic fish and what it could mean for their future, we're joined now by Carson Jeffries. He's a senior research ecologist at the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. Good afternoon, Carson.
Good afternoon.
It's great to have you here with us. To get us started, could you talk a little bit about the different salmon runs in California?
Salmon in California are an amazing thing. We have four different runs of Chinook salmon in the Central Valley, and it really, we name them by the time of the year that they come in from the ocean and into the rivers. So we have winter run, spring run, fall run, and late fall run, and it's really when they come into the rivers.
So that's what we have around California and when they run. Could you tell us a little bit about the salmon that are currently being impacted by the Park Fire? Where are they located?
So spring run historically were very abundant in California. And one of the things is that they come in the spring and they spend all summer in the rivers. And really, when we put the dams in, is we really disconnected them from the valley floor and kept them on the valley floor from the upper watershed habitats. And so really the only habitats that remain for them are Butte Creek, Deer Creek, Mill Creek, and a little bit in Battle Creek. And that's really where their core population is at right now.
And these are all in Tehama County, Shasta County, all the counties north of us, essentially, from Sacramento County.
Yeah, from really Chico up through Redding.
So what do these prime salmon habitats look like? What makes them so good for fish?
So these rivers right now, the oversummering habitat, because it's so hot and dry in California that to remain cool is they have to have these big, deep bedrock pools. So when you think of a high Sierra pool, it's kind of those are the habitats that were historically available, these fish, and it's what they rely on throughout the summer months to make it until they actually lay their eggs in the fall season.
Even before the Park Fire that we've been talking about, what has the current population of spring-run Chinook salmon looked like in these rivers, the Deer, Mill, and Butte Creeks?
They've really struggled in that because they do have to spend their summers in fresh water is that the droughts from 12 through 16 and then 20 through 22 had a really big impact on them in a negative way. And we've really seen those population numbers falling since the drought of the early 2010s.
So it's really the drought that has led to the steep decline in the population?
Yeah, it's really been tough for them in that we've had, for Mill Creek and Deer Creek, the drought has been very impactful. And as far as Butte Creek goes, it was doing pretty well, and we've had some major die-offs of adult salmon in Butte Creek over the last couple of years.
You know, I talked in the intro about fire and it threatening this iconic fish here in California. I think when people think about wildfire, though, they don't automatically think about our rivers and our fish. How exactly is this fire threatening this species?
Yeah, so more often than not, we don't see fire directly affect the salmon. It's not like they're boiling in the water because the fire oftentimes doesn't get as close to the rivers. There's a riparian buffer there. But what happens is after the fire goes through and removes the vegetation and then the fall and winter rains come, is it washes down sediment and it can fill up the places where the fish lay their eggs. And so it's not really the direct impact so much on the adult fish, but it's on the next generation that they're going to lay into the gravels. And without those gravels being free of silt, is we can see detrimental impacts.
And what about what is dropping from the sky, the fire retardant that the firefighters need to use to slow these fires down? What kind of an impact does that have?
So retardant does have an impact on the aquatic ecosystem, and that's pretty well documented at this point. But at the same time, Cal Fire and the Forest Service also have regulations to how closely to the rivers that they're able to drop retardant on the ground to help fight that fire. And so with those regulations, they do a good job. Obviously, it still gets, you know, when it does rain, it's part of that slurry of material that gets washed into the rivers and can have an impact farther on down the system. But it's oftentimes not a direct impact because of the precautions that are taken when they actually lay the retardant on the fire.
As a researcher, of course, you're going to want to know how things are going now, but I'm wondering, the fall and the winter when the rains come, is that going to be even more critical to study how the fish population has made it through with things washing into the river?
Yeah, so there's a whole series of monitoring that takes place for these fish throughout the year, is that there's oftentimes snorkel counts that are happening to see how they're doing. And then as the season goes on, we have this constant water quality monitoring program that's taking place. And so as the rivers start to rise during the rainy season, is we'll be looking at sediment loads, we'll be looking at chemical loads that come out of there. So for instance, when the campfire happened and burned paradises, there was a whole monitoring program set up to look at the chemicals, particularly from the urban interface there, is that there's a lot of, when cars burn and houses burn and those chemicals run off, it probably has a potentially bigger impact on the chemicals that are coming through, not just the sediment load.
Well, I was going to ask you to look back at history and some of the recent fires we've had. You mentioned the campfire. Are there examples of some of those fires harming salmon populations? And if so, were those populations able to bounce back?
Yeah, it was. When the campfire happened, is there was real concern for the Butte Creek population, as that has been the stronghold of our spring run population. And what happened is after 2018, the year of 2019, we had a really wet winter. And that really wet winter allowed those fish to actually, it moved the sediment through, the fish thrived as juveniles, and we actually saw one of the largest runs we've seen come back from that cohort. And we call it the Phoenix cohort because it rose from the ashes of the fire, but it needed those physical conditions. It needed water in the river. It needed good out-migration conditions. And we had 23,000 fish that came back. But unfortunately, those fish came back in 2022, which was a dry year. And through some water management challenges, we lost almost all of those fish that came back as adults through warm temperatures in that year. And I think it really highlights the importance of the whole life cycle of these fish, from being able to lay eggs in the gravels, you know, so we have to think about the sediment that happens there, their out-migration conditions, their time in the ocean, and then they make it all the way back. And we have to protect that whole circle of the life of them. Otherwise, they're lost. And that's kind of where we're at right now.
That's such a delicate process and such a high-risk process. You mentioned the life cycles. I'm wondering, when it comes to salmon, which part of the salmon life cycle is most at risk of being impacted? Is it the young spawn, the adult fish?
It's really all of them. And I think that the changing climate and the needs of water for the state are one of the things that are kind of constantly pulling at them in different directions. If you lose that circle at any point, then the chain doesn't go anymore. And so all of them are threatened, all the stages of the life cycle. But if you lose any of them, then it's a failure. And so you need to protect the entire thing. And I think that's one of the things that makes salmon so unique, is that they are these whole integrators of the system, from the gravels where they're born, the valley where they migrate out to the ocean, through the delta. They spend their time in the ocean, so they're affected by changes in the ocean as well. And then they come back. And so they're integrating that entire ecosystem. I think it's one of the kind of canaries in the coal mine for us, is that when they are unsuccessful, we should really be looking at why they're not being successful on the landscape, because we're part of this ecosystem as well.
Well, I'd like you to talk more about that. I mean, for the average person who might not know too much about our native salmon population, why should they care about these fish and their importance here in California?
Well, I think historically they were culturally and socially important, and that, you know, the indigenous communities relied on them for a food resource and from a spiritual standpoint. And then as well now, besides just understanding that healthy rivers provide habitats for healthy salmon populations, is that when salmon populations fall, is they can fall under the Endangered Species Act, which limits the amount and how water is moved around the state. So if we have endangered species, then we have restrictions on water that goes to agriculture. We have restrictions on water that goes to municipal uses. And so they're important from just a water management perspective in California, as well as just being this iconic species that is in our place that we live.
Sounds like a real domino effect when it comes to water deliveries for other parts of the state. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with UC Davis researcher Carson Jeffries about the threat the Park Fire poses to California salmon. So we talked a little bit about the Park Fire and the threat that it poses. Would these fish be at threat right now, or is it going to take weeks and months for them to actually be impacted?
It's more likely to be impacted over the weeks to months, and it will probably be their young that are the most impacted. If they make it through this first phase of the fire, and oftentimes what we see is that the smoke actually helps cool off some of the rivers because there's not the direct solar light going in. So unless there's direct ash or something falling in the river, is the impacts are generally in the following 6 months after a fire.
Do you have an estimate on when officials, someone like yourself, would be able to get up there and assess the potential damage?
We don't have an estimate right now, but I imagine as soon as the is given the green light is that there'll be officials, probably from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, going up there and assessing the run, because they had surveys from before the fire started. So we knew what the population was prior to, and we'll have an assessment afterwards as soon as the green light's given.
Is there anything that can be done to try and lessen the impact of wildfires, either a fire that's raging right now or just future fires on fish?
I think the biggest thing for salmon is that a resilient salmon population is able to withstand disturbance. Is salmon for millennia have handled disturbance, whether it's been something like a volcanic eruption in Mount St. Helens after the Toutle River was more or less destroyed, is that we saw salmon come back in years after. And so they're able to handle these disturbances given the population resiliency. Our big challenge now is that we're so small of populations that the resiliency in there is not necessarily able to rebound as quickly. And that's my biggest concern.
Well, given all the concerns that sort of are stacked on top of each other for this species, I'm wondering, are you optimistic that salmon in the Deer, Mill, Butte Creeks, that they will survive, that they'll thrive and bounce back?
I do have hope. I mean, if we don't have hope, then it's tough to go forward. And I see, we talked about this with what we call the Phoenix cohort after the campfires. There was genuine concern that the Butte Creek population was going to be lost. We had a wet year in 2019. That cohort thrived under those conditions. So if we have hydrologic conditions, if we have enough precipitation and we have that habitat available, the salmon are able to rebound really quickly. And I think the thing that we have to do as a society of people who use water is making sure that we're prioritizing those fish when we're making decisions at this point in time, and making sure that we follow that entire cohort when we do have the good years, that we can't let it go. Like, we can't let bad things happen to the adults that come back, and making sure we do everything in our power to keep that population intact is really important. And it's not just as, you know, the environmentalists, it's everybody who's using water is really reliant on these fish being healthy.
Such an important part of California, both our past and current times. Well, Carson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Carson Jeffries is a senior research ecologist at the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. We've been talking about the impact of the Park Fire and other wildfires on California's vulnerable salmon populations. Up next, California faces an affordable housing crisis, but two ballot measures this November are looking to make a dent in that problem. We'll break down Prop 5 and Prop 33. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Chris Nichols.